We are barreling into this week's show at full throttle at mile marker 286. It's great to be here. I'm glad you're here with us. Parish of the Patriots. We just go wide open. That's the only way we know. We never throttle it back here. The Parish of the Patriots. We go all in. Hey, we got a programming note for you. It doesn't really matter, but I'm going to share it with you anyway. And that is, it's kind of one of those rare occasions. I'm recording this show on the day that it will be airing. So I got to get it done and get it posted up. Normally, I record over the weekend. I got plenty of time to get it up. It doesn't mean the quality is going down. If I didn't tell you, you wouldn't know the difference. But as such, I do check the listener supporter mail. I wound up checking the listener supporter mailbag a little later. So it might affect that. But I just letting you know. I still haven't got any word from Sven. I don't know anything. I'm waiting to hear from him. Waiting to get word. As soon as I have something I can share, I will share with y'all. I know y'all are wondering. I'm wondering. I'm you don't hear anything. It's worrisome, but I kind of understand. I mean, moved to this facility. He's under tight supervision here. You know, they're not going to just let him start talking to people right off the bat. So I get it. I'm just hoping, hopefully, we'll hear something. So, again, as soon as I've got something, I will share it with y'all. I know that the vast majority of you are return members of the congregation. We get these regulars. All of you, most of you are regulars. I appreciate it. You're getting something out of it that makes you come back every week. If you are new, we do have a Christian-specific segment. That is roughly, yes, the other members of the congregation, I'll tell you it's real roughly, but it's roughly the halfway point of the show. It's an hour-long show, so roughly after about 30 minutes, we'll be doing that. If you are new, give that a listen at least one time. Even if you don't believe or whatever, I encourage you. You don't have to. That's why I put it in its own section, because there are some people that are just so opposed to listening to something like that. At least you can enjoy the ramblings of the first part of the show. That way nobody could say, well, I don't want to hear all that mixed in. It's there. I do encourage you at least give it a shot one time. It's not going to be going down to the MCC with the gay anal flag hanging off of the pulpit sort of thing, as you might guess. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I am passing the plate around. Got the ultimate privacy coin. We have got snail mails right there on the description page. There's the address. That's it. Now, there is Bitcoin addresses on this site that says, you know, we can take donations via Bitcoin. That is not me. I don't have a way to access that. That is, those were up there from Sven before he got sent away. You know, those aren't mine. I don't have access to that. I can't touch that. And that's fine. You know, anything that's in there, I'm assuming he'll be able to get to that at some point in the future, but I can't get to that. If you want to support, you get something, you want to put something in the plate for me, you've got one option. Learn to address an envelope. Put a stamp on it. It's awesome. I really do. I like it. Let's do the listener supporter mailbag. Let's go through it. And I do have one right off the top. I'll say I've got one. This is not going to get mentioned here. We'll push it into the Christian specific segment. GPD, some dough for the show. Thanks. And that is from Drew. Well, thank you, Drew. Really means a lot. I'm telling you, it means a lot. The moral support, financial support, I do. I really appreciate it. We're going to build a new church building, a youth center. No, we're not. We're not doing that. But it is very much appreciated. Grand Junction, no note, but I did want to let you know. Did want to let you know that it got here. I just realized I said that like there was more. That's it. I had to stop for a minute and go dig around. I'm like, I thought there was more here. But I did have the other ones going in. I just said the other ones going in the Christian specific segment. So I guess that's it. I don't think I missed anybody. I'm paranoid about that. That happened to me one time. I got done doing a show. And then later on, I was going through these things. And I'm like, wait a minute. I know I didn't mention this one. Luckily, I caught myself. You know, y'all care enough to support the show. I like to do the listener support mailbag so you know what got here. You know, you can't track it through the blockchain. You're only going to know what got here if I mention it. As far as I know, one time I forgot, and it really bothered me. You know, I don't say these things frivolously. It really, really bothered me when I realized I forgot that it was really no big deal. I mean, just did it on the next week's show, but it bothered me. felt like I didn't hold up my end of the bargain. So I don't think I missed anybody here. I do think I got it all. So paranoid. So digging around here in the prestigious recording studio, a.k.a. my bedroom. And I don't think I missed anyone. So there we go. That got the listener supporter mailbag wrapped up. Again, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I was reading an article on opinion piece this morning. And, you know, it was one of those basically normie conservative, I'm in denial tier opinion pieces. I would like to, I don't know who the writer, well, I mean, the writer's name is, I didn't bother looking up to see who they were. It's not somebody I was familiar with because I go all kinds of different places and read different things. And I'm not familiar with this writer. But it was, I'm not even meaning to say this in a derogatory term, but it was very much a boomer take on the nation around us. What I mean by that is this clinging to a fantasy, you know, unrealistic, not real. And the opinion piece was something along the lines of, you know, all these different ways that America is in decline. Now, this opinion piece, I mean, and his points were not incorrect. What was incorrect was he's going on about, it's not too late to save America. It's not too late. We can turn it around. But we're going to have to take action. We've got to do something. We've got to turn America around. Otherwise, we're going to lose our country. Look at this. America's in steep decline. The government's in debt. What are we can turn it around and we can save America. But we got to act fast. It's not exactly an original take. First thing that strikes me is if it's possible, I would argue that it's not even desirable, and we'll get to that here in a minute. But if it's possible to quote unquote turn around and save America, we can do it, y'all. Then why isn't he telling us what we're supposed to be doing? You know? It's like the people on the more extreme side say, nobody, why aren't you doing something? You know, implying that you should go, I don't know, bomb a government office or something. They won't ever tell you exactly what it is. And if it is so important, how come they themselves are not doing it? Why are they chiding you, rando, on the internet and telling you you're supposed to go do it? It's kind of like that. We can save America. Well, tell us what we are supposed to do under the democracy system. Vote harder? If we can save America, and again, I argue that that's not even something you should want to do. What is it that we should be doing? Now, there, as usual, that part's just vague. We're supposed to, I guess, what? Demand that our Congress people, you know, act differently and quit being corrupt? Or we'll vote somebody else in? Yeah. Because that's totally worked my entire life. We. Of course, at some of these points, I got into these points and, you know, the person writing, and I'm not even being specific. I don't link up articles on the Parish of the Patriot Show. We do that on the Daily Nationalist and thus I'm not doing it here. But the person didn't understand a lot of fundamental things of the way things operate. You know, for instance, they were going on and on about the government has got to quit spending money. It can't got to quit borrowing money. The government cannot borrow money. It's got to quit borrowing money. It can't afford. The government needs to balance its budget. I've been hearing that. I've been on this earth going on 57 years, and I've been hearing that as long as I've been sentient enough, you know, aware enough. As a toddler, they were saying it then. I just don't remember it. As long as I can remember political speech, they've been talking about the government needs to balance its checkbook just like the American people do. And it don't ever happen. The government needs to start spending within its means. The government has got to quit borrowing money. And they don't even understand. The government keeps printing this money, and they keep printing the money, and at some point in time, they don't even understand. The government cannot literally cannot stop deficit spending because the entire economic system will collapse. Money, I hate the term. And we all use it. I occasionally have used it myself and probably will again. And even as I say, use the term at times, I still hate the term. And that is the government printing money. Money printer go burr, you know, the meme. The government, of course, does not print money. I this is not how money creation works. Money is, and I know I've said this before, but y'all may not have heard it. You may have forgot it. Money is introduced into the system by debt. It is not printed into existence. That's stupid. It is borrowed into existence. During the 08 financial collapse, I don't want to say collapse, but, you know, financial disaster, how you want to say it. You know, Ben Bernanke famously said if he could, he would drop money out of helicopters, and he got the nickname Helicopter Ben from that. But people didn't really understand what he was saying and the implications of what he was saying. By saying if he could, he would drop money out of helicopters, he didn't mean he couldn't get permission. What he was doing, he was admitting that's not the way it works. He was admitting if money is simply printed, I'm getting off on a tangent here. If money, but I'm going to circle back so I can make the point. If money is simply printed, then Ben Bernanke could have dropped it out of helicopters on people. They could print the money and give everybody money. He was explaining, and most people didn't understand, that money is created under this system that we live in. Money is created via debt. That's how it starts. That's how money is created. And because our entire economy is essentially a usury system, it is based on debt. More money is created when money is borrowed. And by the nature of the system, it is constantly required to expand. Why? Because at any given time, there's more money owed than is in existence. If you stopped everything today, if the government said we're not borrowing any more money, we're balancing our checkbook, we're going to stop everything today and balance the books, you can't. Because right now, if you stopped the presses, if you stopped everything right now today, the books would come out. There is, you know, I'm just pulling out random numbers here to make a point. There's $50 quadrillion owed. In all of existence, there's only $20 quadrillion in existence. You see the problem. It has to always expand, trying to chase that difference that can never be made up. It's a stupid system to base your economy on. It's based on perpetual growth, not of the economy itself, not in your standard of living, not in their made up GDP numbers, but a constant growth in debt. Now, back in the 1990s, when Clinton was in there, they eased credit. All of a sudden, you go get a credit. I was alive. I was alive back then. I was alive then. You go get your credit card. I got my first credit card back in the early 90s. All of a sudden, people got credit cards. They were giving credit cards out like. They eased up. People were able to go out and buy. You could buy a new car, a really nice new car, for under $20,000. People were borrowing money. They expanded credit, and it seemed like the economy was doing good. You know? They didn't have to cheat to get Bill Clinton another term. They kind of did for the simple fact that the Republicans ran Bob Dole, which was just like the Republican. The Republicans making fun of the Democrats about Joe Biden. They all don't want you to bring up Bob Dole. They did the same shit. They ran a man, bless his heart, who is essentially a walking corpse as their candidate. And they talking about Joe Biden. They want you to remember Bob Dole. Bring that up. Republicans like, oh, Democrats ran this old senile Joe Biden walking, tucking weekend at Bernie's Joe Biden. They don't want you to bring, yeah, you. I remember when y'all ran Bob Dole. They don't want to talk about that. Poor Bob. They ran old Bob Dole. Sad. Anyway, it didn't matter because it seemed like the economy was doing good. Why? Because debt has expanded. They were able to create more money. People are borrowing right and left. People getting new cars, running up their credit cards, going on vacation. The government has to borrow money because guess what? Now the people are all tapped out. There is no, if they came out today and made an announcement, everybody's credit card interest rate has gone to zero. We're not even going to charge you any interest on it. We make it 1%. Your credit card interest rate has now, by decree, 1%. It wouldn't matter. People are broke. The people, they can no longer expand it, the debt. Because remember, it's got to always be expanding. They can no longer expand the debt in the private sector. Everybody's broke. It's all gone. There's no water left in the well. It's dry. You can go over there. You can drop your bucket in there. Ain't nothing coming up but a bunch of sand. There's nothing there to have. The government borrows money. They are the borrower. You've heard the term lender of last resort. They are the borrower of last resort. They're the only thing keeping up the facade of a functioning economy. That's why they have to borrow more and more money.
People are like, I can't believe the government just wasted another $3 trillion on a failed project. Well, part of that's corruption. Part of that is they don't give a shit. They've got to make the money go. They've got to borrow the money. And to borrow the money, they got to spend it on something.
We think all this nonsense talk about we're going to build a moon base. We're going to have we're going to have an outpost on Mars. That's what we're going to do. We're going to build a moon base and we're going to explore the galaxy and stop the climate from changing. They got to spend the money. They've got to borrow the money. So to borrow the money, they've got to come up with these cockamamie justifications because they got to borrow it. That is the money, quote unquote, the money printing that happens is the borrowing. Does that make sense? So when you hear some well-meaning, you know, I don't mean to be dismissive. I understand when people mean well and they just don't understand. But when you hear some well-meaning, but again, respectfully ignorant normie conservative talking about the government needs to balance their budget and quit borrowing money, they don't even understand the basics of it. I mean, they just simply don't. Now, granted, there's going to come a time when they literally can't. The government will be tapped out. That's when the whole house of cards will come crashing down. You know? Because they're the borrower of last resort. Once that is gone, the economy, the usury-based economy, will literally no longer be able to expand. It's like, you know, people use the term Ponzi scheme. It's not exactly accurate, but it'll fit well enough. When it can no longer expand, it will collapse in on itself. As I went through this opinion piece, talking about we need to save America, and one thing that struck me is curious, is because really I thought America's not going anywhere. And when I say America's not going anywhere, what I mean is the American people aren't going anywhere. And the people are still going to be here. What this person is essentially winds up, in, unintentionally, by the way, kvetching about is the government collapsing, the government going away. If the whole system collapses this afternoon, you're still going to be here. I'm still going to be here. Your neighbor's still going to be there. The people are still going to be here. The government is not the people, not by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm sure this person didn't think of it that way. He probably is a normie conservative. He's probably not really a big fan of the government. And yet the idea of the government going away is so frightening to him. It means the end of America. But does it? It means the end of the American empire. Hallelujah for that. Out of all the follies that befall man, the follies that he goes chasing after with his heart, empire has got to be one of the most foolish. It really is. It's always, always, always self-destructive. It's extremely expensive. You wind up imposing your will on people that really shouldn't have anything to do with you, and they resent you for it, even if they go along with it. It's one of the great follies that men undertake as empire. The collapse of the American empire. Again, look, the people are still going to be here. People are still going to be trying to go about their lives.
You will imagine, what will it be like?
Well, what it'll be like is people will still be going about their lives trying to make a living. It'll probably be a lot more difficult with the economy collapsing, but people are going to try to figure something out. You know? What you are going to find is people that are actually able to do something, they actually have some knowledge, are going to have suddenly a lot more value in this society than people who have a piece of paper hanging on the wall and don't have any idea how to do anything. I mean, one of the examples I always say is if you've got two neighbors and you've got something to trade, a value, and one neighbor knows how to fix your car and the other neighbor, you know, knows how to lecture you about, you know, studies in African feminism or whatever, which neighbor has more value to you? Hell, you don't even have to say that. One neighbor knows how to fix your plumbing, and the other neighbor knows how to do stock brokerage or something. Things that are valuable now aren't necessarily going to be valuable then. Now, this brings us to kind of what I wanted to get to with my original point. You know, what do I foresee? This idea of saving America, look, you don't save collapsing empires. It's too big. There's too much momentum, you know? If I dropped a piece of paper on you off a shelf, you would look up and you'd reach up and catch it, right? But if you looked up and there was a pallet of bricks and you looked up right when it's starting to fall off, you're going to try to catch it. You're going to get the hell out of the way. Because it's too big. There's too much momentum. You can't stop it if you wanted to. It's too heavy. That's how empires are. They're too big. When they are in the momentum, that's a pallet of bricks just starting to teeter off the shelf. If you run up there and try to stop it, it's too big. It's too heavy. Well, empires are collapsing. You don't stop that. You don't turn it around. You're going to save America. It's in the process of decline and collapse. You can't stop it. Not going to happen. But again, so many people, you know, that's all they've known, and they can't imagine that being a good thing. I think it's a good thing. It's going to be hard in the short term, but the American empire going away, this government in Washington, D.C., ultimately either going away or being drastically reduced, and I'll get to that in a minute, that is a good thing. See, things that I see, well, how do I want to put this? I don't want to get to that. Yeah, I'll get to that here in a minute. I'm sorry. See, you can tell this is unscripted. I do this whole show. What did I just say? 286th time off of the top of my head. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's not so good. What I see happening, because people get this vision like Mad Max, you know, they watch too many movies, they envision Mad Max and like there's just complete anarchy and people, look, anywhere you have people are going to organize. People are going to organize, and because people by their nature are going to organize, you're going to wind up with some form of government. Functioning government, you know, be it crude or not, you will wind up with some form of that, because that's just how people operate. They've always operated that way. They always will. That's human nature. Now, I've ultimately said the best outcome, and I think the ultimate outcome will be secession. I think it's desirable, and I think it's likely. You're not going to hold America. We got to hold America together as an entity. Why would you want to do that? I don't want to do that. What would secession look like? This is actually what I had jotted down that I wanted to talk about, and I wound up going this whole long way around to it. So what would that look like? You see, I don't see it playing out like most people do. Most people say, well, they would never allow you to do that. Don't you remember Abraham Lincoln? This isn't the 1860s, by the way. I don't see it as, we're going to use Texas. I live here in Texas, y'all know. And I'm bullish. I am. I'm bullish on Texas. We got resources. We got a seaport. We've got manufacturing capability. We don't really use it. We've got IT capability. We got tech capability. We've got so much going for us. If we didn't have the shackle of Washington, D.C. and the stupid empire around our necks, imagine just for a minute, and I'm getting off topic, but just for a minute, imagine suddenly Texas is an independent nation with a sound, normal, functioning government, and we're able to sign some of these BRICS. We become a member of BRICS, and we're signing trade deals with China and Russia, Japan, whoever. We're free to do business. Sky's the limit. You know, we could produce enough oil. We got refineries. We got all that. We got a seaport. The refineries are down there by the seaport. We make more energy than we can consume, and we sell it to the producers that are producing that need to burn that energy. Man, good times would be here. We get the shackle of empire around our necks. Now, I don't see, like I said, we're going to use Texas. I'm bullish on Texas. I didn't say I'm bullish on Greg Abbott or something. I'm bullish on politicians. I'm bullish on Texas long term. Now, I don't see it as like when I talk about secession. One day, you know, the state stands up and declares, we hereby declare our right to secede. We're declaring our independence from Washington, D.C. People say that. They're not going to let you. It's not going to be like that. I don't think it'll be like that. I just see. Look, it starts on the international. Because it starts bigger. You know, if you think of it as a big circle, it starts out on the edges. It starts on the international soup. What are you seeing right now? We, for the first time in my lifetime, we are at a point. I mean, the U.S. government is always making demands of other nations. You know, I mean, it's always been like that for some, well, it's always been like that for a long time. And what you see different now is the U.S. government continues to make even more and more hysterical demands. The demands are getting more hysterical in nature. But what's different is now you're seeing more and more governments around the world just ignore them, you know? They're having a hysterical fit telling Venezuela, you can't elect Maduro. You can't have that election's not real. You can't do that. You got to put the other guy in. They're just ignoring them. You know, they're going like even Serbia, you know, who's felt been on the receiving end of Uncle Sam bringing freedom and democracy to them before. Even Serbia is by and large just ignoring them. They're making demands. You got to join us in sanctioning Russia, and Serbia just ignoring them. What starts off with countries on the international stage ignoring diktats from Washington. This demonstrates their fading power. See, 30 years ago, nobody ignored that because they had the power to force it. Now that power is fading. And you see people who complain about the government and then, you know, they sitting there bowing down to Trump because Trump says, I'm going to make these people. I didn't use the proper Trump voice. I'm going to make these people fear America again. They do this because they're not afraid of us. Why in the world is it desirable to make every other nation in the world afraid of us? What is wrong with the American mindset that they sit around, nod their heads and goes, hell yeah, let's make everyone scared of us. Do you walk outside your home and you're like, look around, like, yeah, my neighbors are afraid of me. If your neighbors are afraid of you, then you're probably some kind of lunatic or complete antisocial asshole. No, you're not going to walk outside. You want your neighbor to come over and say, hey, how you doing? You know, shake your hand. If you need anything, let me know. That's being neighborly. Why in the hell would you, why is it a desirable thing that every nation in the world amounts to your neighbor should be afraid of you? I'm going to make everybody afraid of America again. Nobody fears us anymore. Why should everybody fear us? It tells you there's a problem to begin with. If you want people to fear you, then you're trying to make them do things not in their own best interest. Anyway, what you're seeing is more countries are just ignoring. And you see, that is going to work. As I said from the beginning, think of it as a circle. That's out there on the edge. And that is moving in towards the center. And what I envision is, as Washington's power fades, you move from it being other nations in the world. Suddenly, that's more and more that will start being reflected also at home. So you wind up with a situation, going back to my illustration using Texas as an example, Texas just starts doing things. I mean, they don't declare independence from America, but they just start basically doing their own independent policy thing. And when Washington, D.C. says, you can't do that because we say so, and Texas just ignores them, just like these other nations are doing right now. They just ignore them. Because by that point in time, I'm not saying that point in time is now, but by that point in time, they can't do anything about it. They can sit there and threat and demand and throw a fit on the floor, but at the end of the day, everybody knows they can't do anything about it. So Texas just goes on. We're not as far from that as people imagine. Currently, what you wind up with are these stage things. As an example, the border thing here recently, fairly recently, and Greg Abbott, boy, he sent down this is theater. This isn't what, actual like moves towards independent. I'm using this example, but you had this theater at the border and Greg Abbott put up like 10-foot of barbed wire for a photo op and the people just walking around it. And then the U.S. government says, you can't do that anymore. And the state of Texas goes to court. And of course, the court says, yeah, you can't do that anymore. Now, if this was real, imagine when the U.S. government said, you can't do that anymore. And the state just simply ignored them and kept doing it. I mean, what are they going to do? Is the Supreme Court going to send their Supreme Court army down there to force you to let these people cross the border? No, they're not. That's the difference between real, when it becomes real, and this current theater nonsense that we've got going on. The way I see secession ultimately coming about is it's just secession by default. When you get to the point, a state such as Texas, and it wouldn't be the only one, by the way, just simply starts ignoring the demands from Washington, D.C., it becomes ever more apparent that they can't do anything about it. And then you wake up one day, and basically Texas is, for all practical purposes, Texas is an independent nation by default. They just do what they want to do. They have their own policy. Hell, they're directly negotiating with China. Even though Washington, D.C. is saying, you're violating the sanctions, you can't do that. They can't do anything about it. And you might wind up, and you wind up, Washington, D.C. may not go away, but what you could wind up with is their power then would shrink to the point they're ruling the Northeast. Washington, D.C. is the capital of Yankee land, the Northeast, and that's it. And that's as far as their power goes, not even a regional power. And you wind up with these other more independent. That's the way I see secession playing out. And I'm bullish on it. People are scared. They can't imagine. We got to save America. I have no desire to save this, this empire. I almost use colorful language again. I try not to do that. I'm trying to be professional here. There's no reason to desire to save this empire. I have no desire to do that. It's not a good thing for anybody on the face of the planet. The sooner it goes away, the better. I see secession. I don't see civil war. I see civil unrest because as governments lose legitimacy, you're going to see civil unrest. But as far as like big political shifts, I don't see a civil war, 1860 style. I just see a default secession taking place as Washington's power fades. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. We're going to keep on rolling without ado. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. And as we get rolling with the Christian specific segment, we're rolling back into listener supporter mailbag. And this is from Mr. T. GPD, when our Lord returns, do you think he will be angry, vengeful, or merciful? Again, that's from Mr. T. And Mr. T, I did get two from you this week, as I should have mentioned earlier. I believe I mentioned earlier. I'm recording on the day of the show. So I wound up checking the mail a little later than usual. So I got two from you this week. So on the next show, I don't mention you. This is the reason why. When the Lord returns, what's it going to be like? What's it going to be like? I think it's a good question. I think it's a mistake to attach like emotionalism to it. I don't expect emotionalism. I think the best way to visualize it, to sum it up, we can get a glimpse, snapshot kind of idea, the day of the Lord. Look at, if we look at Amos chapter 5, verse 18, woe unto you that desire the day of the Lord. To what end is it for you? The day of the Lord is darkness and not light. As if a man did flee from a lion and a bear met him, or went into the house and leaned his hand on the wall and a serpent bit him. Shall not the day of the Lord be darkness and not light, even very dark, and no brightness in it? Now, to be fair, that's not an apples to apples thing, because he's discussing specifically like the destruction of a nation, but it does give us a little insight. The day of the Lord is going to be, for most people, I mean, it's going to be extremely, extremely frightening, because you're talking about the time itself, the existence of time itself will be ripped apart. There's going to be, most people who have put their faith in the world are going to be in such sheer terror, because everything will be taken away from them. I can visualize people being driven so mad with fear that they're ripping their fingernails off, digging in the dirt, trying to dig a hole to go hide in. Being that frightening. I think it'll be even frightening for believers, because it's just going to be such a sudden thing. But as far as an overall thing, An overall theme, what will it be like? Will it be the Lord? Will be angry? Will he be vengeful, etc.? He will be bringing justice. And this will be another thing that strikes fear. He will be bringing truth. You look at the amount of injustice, and everything in this world around us is so based on lies, and people have completely built their identities, their sense of self around these lies. And suddenly, because when the day of the Lord comes, it's all stripped away in the blink of an eye. Every lie is gone, and you're forced to see things for what they are. And people's entire sense of self will be gone. He will be bringing justice. He will be tearing apart the lies. He'll be tearing apart the nonsense. He will be bringing justice once and for all. And he'll just be going about his work. You know, we're told in the New Testament, you know, how the angels will come and start sorting people. It's just going to be work. You know, we're just sorting people out. Weeds from the wheat, etc. You know, sheep from the goats. It's just going to be unemotional, just sorting. Here's where everybody has wound up. It's not a matter of him being emotional about it. He's just going to be going about his work. But it will be a reestablishment of justice, which has been so denied. And because justice and truth go hand in hand, and truth has been denied so much in this world. And the return of truth will be the return of justice. Now, let's get into this week's discussion I thought we would have here. We're going to look at Matthew chapter 4, and we're going to do verse 8 through roughly, I think, verse 10. And this is Jesus in the desert being tempted of the devil. Again, the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain, and sheweth him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them, and saith unto him, all these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me. Then saith Jesus unto him, Get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. Let's get into this. First things first, which most people probably recognize right away, is that Jesus does not argue with Satan that these kingdoms of the world are his to give. You know, Jesus doesn't rebuke Satan and say, those aren't yours to give. You're offering something you don't even have. Does not do that. But obviously, he refuses the offer. And I want to get into this a little bit. Refusing the offer. We're going to, for this exercise, we're going to set aside for a moment Jesus is the Son of God in the sense, it'll make sense. I'll get it spit out. And as we go through it, you know, because we start off with, well, he's the Son of God. Of course, he's not going to take up the deal, you know, take up a deal with the devil. So we have to kind of move that aside and actually get into this question, what the devil is offering, because that's what it means to you, because you and I are not Jesus. You know, we are sons of God and through Christ and adoption. We'll get to that as we go along here. But we're not Jesus Christ himself. And for some people, the devil does come along. He may not offer you all the kingdoms of the world to rule over, but he does sometimes offer people certain things. And we need to look at remember what Jesus said. People get all confused and they act like things are so hard to understand. And the answers are literally there. Jesus literally told us. As he said, let those who have ears to hear, hear. Let those who have eyes to see, let them see. The answers are right here. Jesus told us the devil is what? A liar and a murderer. So when the devil came to Jesus and he says, look, here's all these magnificent kingdoms of the world. I'll give them to you to rule over. Just fall down, just bow down and worship me. Stop. He's a liar and a murderer and a deceiver. Now, Jesus, obviously, he's not falling for the lie, but a lot of people do. And what is the lie? That those kingdoms would be Jesus to rule. See, that was the lie to begin with. If you'll bow down and worship me, which would be an act that you can't take back. In other words, sell your soul to the devil. Once you surrender, once you give in and bow down to the devil, once you take the ticket, once you make the deal, you can't roll that back. You can't go back to God and say, God, the devil lied to me. You can't undo that. But the devil's lying to begin with. Now, remember what we've talked about here many times. Things of the devil are easy to spot because he will always give you a choice. It's always your choice so he can accuse you. If it's a something you're just simply literally drug and put somewhere, that's not the devil. He has to give you a choice because he wants to be able to accuse you. Now, the devil says to Jesus, bow down and worship me. I'll give you all these kingdoms to rule. He's lying from the get-go, not because he doesn't have those kingdoms, but because Jesus, if he were to have agreed to that, and again, we're just using this hypothetical so that we understand how it applies to man, because again, we're not Jesus. How does this deal apply to men? Because if Jesus had taken that deal, said, yep, that sounds good to me. I get to rule all these kingdoms. Heck yeah. Put a crown on my head right now. He wouldn't actually get to rule the kingdoms. Oh, he might have been given a throne and a crown, but wouldn't have actually been ruling these kingdoms. We're going to get deep in this. Stay with me. Why? Because if it's something given to you, the devil says, I will give this to you. But here's the catch. There's always a catch, right? If someone shows up, knocks on your door, and you answer your front door, and this guy says, I got $100 I want to give you, you're just going to shut the door because you know there's a catch. This guy's a scammer. He's going to try to get in my house and sell me something, whatever. There is no free. You're going to shut the door. I will give you. The more they're going to give you, the bigger the scam, right? Right? If somebody gives you something, then by the implication is by the fact that they had the power to give it to you. And again, Satan doesn't, or I'm sorry, Jesus does not deny the fact that Satan has the ability to give him these kingdoms to rule. If somebody has the ability to give it to you, what does that mean? It means that at any given time, they also have the ability to take it back. He's not giving you anything. He's loaning it to you. He's offering to let you sit up there and make use of it for a little while, as long as you stay within the confines and the boundaries of what he wants to allow you to do. But you're not actually allowed to make independent decisions. You're not going to be allowed to change anything in a manner which Satan disagrees with. This is the trap of the ticket taker. And it comes in all shapes and forms. If you'll sign this recording contract, I'll make you a star. Make you. I will give this to you. It's not giving anything. He'll give it to you, but he can take it away. If something's given, that means that the person giving it always has the power to take it away. If Jesus would have taken that deal, that means anytime he stepped outside of the bounds of what Satan said he was allowed to do, he could be threatened with taking that away. And it's a real threat because guess what? Once you've made the deal, you don't get to run back to God and say, hey, I regret doing that. I know I turned my back on you and bowed down to Satan and took the deal because I thought it'd be real good right then. But turns out I can't believe that this guy lied. I can't believe he lied. Of course he lied. He's a liar and a murderer from the beginning. If something is given to you, the person giving it to take it away, they will always have control. And this is the trap of the ticket taker. And there are lots of ticket takers today. They make the deal. I'm not saying Satan appears to them. But the workers of Satan appear. They offer them a deal. Well, we're going to give you, we're going to make you this. We're going to make you, you're going to be a president in 10 years, you're going to be a congressman. You want to be a senator? We can make that happen. You want to be a big recording star? We can make that happen. We'll give it to you. All you got to do is sign the deal. And then your life is managed. You're told how you're going to live. You're told what you're going to say. You're told who you're quote unquote dating, who you're in relationship. Every aspect of your life is managed. You have no say in it. You just drug along and you've made the deal. You can't go back. In a future show, hopefully next week, I was going to get into it this week, but I wanted to get into this this week. But I'm not gonna get in future show, probably next week. I'm gonna try to do it next week. We're gonna really get in. I want to get into a discussion, an in-depth discussion about Esau and selling his inheritance for the bowl of stew, the bowl of soup. And that's gonna be an entire segment. I thought about doing it this week, but I wanted to get into this and really bear down on this, and then we'll do that. Again, we'll probably do it next week. No promises. I sometimes get sidetracked and forget. Now, Jesus said what? He's a liar and a murderer. Okay, so if somebody's giving you something, that means he can take it away. It's a means of control. They dangle something, but they can always take it away. Once they've got you hooked in, once you've made the decision, once you've taken the ticket, once you've denied God, once you have bowed down and worshiped the devil, taken his deal, you can't undo that. He's got you. Because now he can accuse you. You made that choice. He can always take it away. You're going to do what you're told. You're going to change the world. You know? You're not going to spread to if I make this deal, he's telling me he's going to give me a mega church and a lot of money. Man, I can spread the gospel to be a great deal. You're not spreading anything. You're going to give the message that he wants you to give. You look at all these big churches and whatnot, and they happen to be basically preaching the world, aren't they? They're preaching everything that the government basically wants. They're preaching nothing different. Oh, they dress it up a little different. but they're basically preaching the same message you get from Hollywood, from the news. A little variation of it. They spice it up a little bit, but you're getting the same thing. Why? Because that's what they're told they're going to preach. You know, if the devil come up and said, Dan, I'm going to tell you what, instead of just doing this little measly show, you can reach tens of thousands of people. I'm going to give you a TV show to do your message on. A mega church. You can stand up there. You can get your hair done. Get your hair done. Nice suit. Walk around, prance around up there. Put on a laser show before you come out. Doesn't that sound good? Just think how many people you can reach. And if you take that deal, guess what? First time you get up there, it's like, man, I'm going to preach about this. And say, no, you're not. What? You're going to give this message. You're going to tell everybody the modern nation state of Israel is the Israel of the Old Testament, and they need to pressure their politicians to support Israel. Otherwise, God's going to curse America. That's what you're going to do. But I don't want to do that. You want to keep this money? Once you took the money, you get used to that real quick. You know, at the end of the day, you're going to shut up and you're going to go out there and you're going to do what you're told. You can give the message that you're told to give. When somebody gives you something, they can always take it away. Now, let's take this. Remember what we've covered here. Let's turn it over and look at the other side. We looked at the Satan side of it. Now, let's turn that over and look at the Lord's side. People will say, non-believers will say, they don't understand. And they don't. They don't understand. A lot of times because they don't want to understand. Sometimes because they literally can't understand because these things have to be understood in the spirit. And sometimes they don't understand just because there's nobody telling it. There's nobody explaining it. But non-believers, or sometimes even people who go to church, will say, well, I don't really understand. Why did Jesus, y'all always talking about Jesus died for your sins. Jesus went to the cross and he died for your sins so you could go into heaven. They say, if your God is omnipotent, he can let you into heaven without Jesus being crucified. That doesn't even make any sense. Why has this guy got to be crucified and tortured to death in a most brutal fashion? I thought your God could do anything. Why does Jesus have to be crucified? Because you deserve punishment? So he's taking the punishment on himself? What is with your God? Why? What is this obsession with punishment and people being in pain? I want a happy-go-lucky God. Why? Jesus had to die for your sins. Bear with me. Remember, don't forget what we just discussed. Don't put that out of your mind. Keep it fresh in your mind because we're looking at the same topic. We're turning it over. Jesus died for your sins. It's written. He's paid the price for your sins. What does that mean? Means it's your salvation. Your salvation, listen to me now, the Lord, the Father, did not give you your salvation. It was purchased. Now, that's why I said, remember what we were just talking about. If somebody gives you something, they can take it away at any time. However, if you purchase something, that's a different story. If somebody says, I'm going to give you a house, oh, okay. You move in and they're like, well, you need to do this and you need to do that because they gave it to you. That means they can take it away, then kick your ass out, right? However, if you go to somebody and says, I like this house, how much do you want from them? And you purchase the home from them and then they come back later and say, hey, I don't like what you're doing. You're like, it's mine now. It's none of your damn business, right? See, if something's given, it can be taken away. However, if you purchase something, it is yours. It is yours. You bought it. It now belongs to you. It's not given. That person has no power. They can give it to you. If they gave it to you, yeah, they can tell you what to do. They can tell you to mow the grass, when to do this, when to do that, what color to paint the damn house, because they gave it to you. However, if you bought the house, whatever, if you put up a pen in the front yard and start raising hogs, it's another damn business because it's yours now. They didn't want what you do with it. They, if they didn't like what you're doing with it, they shouldn't have sold it to you, right? It is purchased. That means it can't be taken away. This is why. This is why Jesus had to die for your sins, because your salvation was purchased. It was purchased. It's yours. It's not given. If it was just given away, whoever gives it can always have the power to take it back away. To not like what you did, you take it away, snatch it away from you. If it's given, it can be taken away. However, if it is purchased, it now belongs to you. The problem here is you can't afford to purchase it. Jesus has purchased your salvation on your behalf. Now, it's between you and Christ. Your salvation has been purchased, not given. If it was given, it could be taken away. It was purchased, so now it's yours. What are you going to do with it? However, you didn't have the money. You didn't have the means to purchase it. Jesus has purchased it on your behalf. It's written to remember you were purchased at a price. It did not come free. You were purchased. Your salvation was purchased at a price. Jesus bought it on your behalf. It can't be taken away because it was purchased. It wasn't given. Jesus purchased it on your behalf. So now your salvation is between Jesus Christ, between Jesus Christ and yourself. The Lord, Jesus rather, purchased your salvation from the Father on your behalf. He purchased it on your behalf. He stood in for you as a guarantor, as it were. He stood in for you and purchased it on your behalf. It wasn't given. It was purchased. Big difference. This is why, Jesus said, no one comes to the Father except through me. Why? Because you can't afford to purchase it. The Lord, the Father, does not give it away. Because if he gave it away, he could take it back, and he doesn't operate that way. See, that's an insincere, that's a deceitful way of operating. That's the way of the devil. We've already looked at that. The Lord doesn't operate that way. He don't give it to you because that's deceitful, because that implies he can take it away. Jesus said, no one comes to the Father but through me. Why? Because you can't afford it. He don't give it away. You've got to purchase it. And quite frankly, you can't afford it. It's way out of your budget. It's way out of your price range. Jesus stands and purchases it on your behalf. Now, somebody might try to argue, well, it doesn't make any difference. What you're just saying, you're just talking about getting it from someone else. You're saying Jesus purchased it on your behalf and turned around and gave it to you. No, he purchased it on your behalf. We'll stick with the house. We'll stick with the house illustration. You want to buy this house. You desire to buy this house. You don't have enough money. Now, someone purchases it on your behalf. That means when it's purchased, it's put in your name. He's not loaning you the money. He purchases it on your behalf, which means when it's purchased, your name is on the deed. It can't be taken back. Your name is on the deed. It was purchased on your behalf. You went down there and said, man, I want this house. And I said, what are you talking about? It's your house. You're like, what do you mean? Well, someone came down here and said they're buying this house on your behalf. Your name, is this your name? Yeah, that's my name. Your name's on the deed. It's your house. Someone purchased it on your behalf. It's in your name. This is a distinction that needs to be clear. Jesus isn't giving it to you. He's purchasing it. It's a big difference now. I want to make sure we understand this. There's a difference between giving it to you and purchasing it on your behalf. Jesus has purchased it. He went down, bought the house, and put it in your name. He purchased it on your behalf. It's yours. Your name is on it. You own it. Same as if you went down and bought it with your own money. He purchased it on your behalf. And that means it can't be taken away because now it's yours. Now, again, this isn't going to make any sense to a non-believer. I'm going to tell you right now. If you're a non-believer and you listen to this and you're like, this don't make no sense. I understand. You know, I'm not belittling. These are things that have to be understood. Because a non-believer will sit there because they have a Hollywood version of God. Well, I thought you said your God was omnipotent. If your God can do anything, why does he have to do all of this? It doesn't make any sense. Because what the Lord has established, you know, there's a set of guidelines that God has established, and God himself operates within these guidelines that God has established. You look at the mess that our world, that the United States, that the West is in. And one of the hallmarks of this mess is what? The government lays down all of these rules, all of these laws, and yet every day in a more blatant fashion, they themselves disregard those laws, don't they? You know, one of the things that gets you about all this system, this democracy system, value of who we are and these politicians and this government system, is the fact that they lay down all of these laws. And yet we see them blatantly breaking those laws themselves, don't they? They don't apply to them. See, those only apply to you. It's illegitimate. You see, God doesn't operate that way. Because, see, that way is disingenuous. God establishes the boundaries, the rules, the natural order, as it were, of things. For instance, as we've just covered, if somebody gives you something for free, that means they can take it away. They have power over that. They can take it away. So as such, you're going to do what you're told to try to keep being able to use that. The confines of the way these things operate, God doesn't violate that. Because if God violates that, then it means that you're just doing that. You're operating in a world that's just based on whatever whim he feels like at the time. And you can't do that. Again, you look at the government. They got all these rules for us and they ignore them. They don't apply to them. Those are just for you. So no one knows what's legal. No one knows what's illegal. It's just whatever they say at the time. God doesn't operate that way because you got to know what's allowed. And if God sets up the framework, God has created the framework. He himself, because he's not disingenuous, he's not a liar like the devil is, he himself will operate within those boundaries so that we can understand. If God just creates this rules, these boundaries, this order that we see around us. If God creates that and then God himself turns around and violates that, how the hell are we supposed to even know what to do? You know, the government convinces it, people have got to quit doing this, quit doing that. But no one even knows what to do. You know, they don't because it's always changing. You know, what's allowed to be said yesterday isn't allowed to be said today. It's very confusing. See, God establishes the order, and as such, God will operate also within that order. That way we understand. That way it makes sense. Because he's not a deceiver. He sets up the rules and the order. And of course, he operates when you see him doing things. It's within those boundaries. That way you understand. That way it makes sense. You can predict it. It's predictable. You can plan your decisions and your behavior around that. Otherwise, God's just operating on a whim. Well, what's the Lord going to condemn us for today? He may wake up on the wrong side of the bed and say, he just doesn't like the way you look. You're going to hell. You haven't done anything. You're going to hell because he's in a bad mood today. If God did not operate within the bounds of the order that he himself has created, then we would have no idea what to do because it's just whatever he decides it is today. Does that make sense? I think it makes sense. This is why God operates within these boundaries. So the non-believer will say, well, why does God have to do all this whole thing of your salvation has to be purchased? He can just make you saved. and then you're back to square one. Then he can wake up the next day and decide to make you condemned. It has to be within the order that the Lord has created. That way we can understand. It's predictable. It makes sense. We can verify what's of the Lord. We can verify what's true and what is not. If you understand it's got to be within these boundaries, if you come across something that's not within these boundaries, then you know right off that you probably aren't understanding it correctly, right? You have a framework in which to understand things. If it's outside of that framework and doesn't make any sense, then you can know, I probably don't have enough information. I don't understand this. It's predictable. Now, as we get ready to wrap up, if your salvation was purchased on your behalf, what is your attitude towards Jesus? I was traveling one day, and I stopped at a cafe to eat lunch. And I was by myself, and I go in there, and I sit down, and I eat lunch, and I got ready to pay the ticket. And I have no idea why, no way, shape, form. I don't know. But I got ready to pay the ticket, and the waitress says, well, your meal's already been paid for. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? And she's like, so somebody else paid for your meal. No explanation. No, they knew you. I didn't look like a homeless person. I have no idea. But this person, for whatever reason, they decided to pay for that meal. I have no idea who the person was, but I was humbled in my heart. You know, not because I couldn't afford the meal. I could afford the meal. But it was just the fact that somebody actually bought a meal on my behalf. You know, it was just, I can't explain it. But I think you know what I'm saying. Now, if that's just a meal, you know, like I said, I could afford that. You know, I mean, it was really nice that somebody did that. I have no idea why. But it was a blessing. You know, it's one of those things, as they say, it kind of gives you hope for humanity to a sense. You know, one way to put it. But I could afford the meal. But what if somebody bought me a house? You know, just bought it on my behalf. What's my attitude going to be? If, you know, I had a feeling of humility or whatever, or gratitude towards somebody paying for a meal that I could actually afford myself, I wouldn't have gone in there and sat down to eat if I couldn't afford it. What's my attitude going to be somebody who purchases a house for me? What is your attitude going to be when someone has purchased your life? Someone has purchased your salvation. Let me tell you something. Now, your salvation isn't something you just set up on the shelf. You know, we talk about this a lot. Your salvation isn't something you just set up. As Jesus said, nobody lights a candle and puts it under a bushel. Now, you've got a salvation. Now, what are you going to do with it? You know, it's not a stagnant thing. It's not static. Your salvation is dynamic. In other words, it's something that you're cultivating. Now, somebody purchased this. Your life has been purchased by someone else on your behalf. It's in your name. It's yours. But what are you going to do with it? Because if you just throw it to the side, if you treat it lightly, if you abuse it, imagine somebody bought the house on your behalf and you go out there and don't take care of it. Just let it fall apart, you know, crap in the floor. Let it fall to ruin. Don't take care of it. No, you're not going to do that, because if that person who bought it on your behalf drives by and sees that you're abusing it, it's disrespectful. It's not the way a man should behave. Your salvation's been purchased. It's in your name. It's on your behalf. It was purchased on your behalf. It's in your name. It's yours. Now, what are you going to do with it? You're going to honor the one who purchased it on your behalf by making the most of it you can, by cultivating it as best you can. Remember, Jesus is the fulfillment of all the law and all the prophets, not the elimination. It's the fulfillment. It's the fulfillment because this was God's intention at the very beginning when he created the first man, was that men would be able to cultivate spiritually to ultimately be at a state of maturity to be of use in the kingdom of God, to have dominion even over the angels, to be that, you know, at a level of being able to even do that. That was the intention from the beginning. That's the fulfillment. Now it can be carried on. Now we have the ability to figure things out, to go through and to cultivate, to keep growing, you know, pruning, working on this salvation so that we're spiritually maturing, so that we ultimately fulfill the will of God. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out. I'm going to try to get into Esau and the bowl of soup, bowl of stew next week. I hope I remember. I'm jotting myself a note. Talk about that next week. Hopefully I'll remember. I think it'll be an interesting discussion. And in a way, it's going to be connected to this, what we've discussed this week. So hopefully we will do that, unless I get sidetracked. But anyways, which is always a possibility. We're going to wrap up again. I thank you for joining me this week. I really hope you enjoyed the show. As always, I really hope you got something out of our Christian-specific discussion this week. Again, thank you for those who dropped something in the plate. It does mean a lot to me. I do, and I always love you, the listener supporter mailbag. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.